Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Your diet is making you lose muscle. No worries. Luke and I are here to the rescue. If you're on contest prep or in a fat loss phase, you want to make sure your nutrition is set up to retain all that hard-earned muscle and optimize, of course, losing body fat. That's what we're going to dive into today. The nuts and bolts and also some of the challenges of programming nutrition to retain tissue. Luke, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I think contest prep nutrition is an interesting one because it's definitely a bunch of different ways that you can run it as far as like medium, high, low, same meal plan across the board. We're going to kind of discuss like some different things in regards to like structures and driving, you know, tissue retention across a prep. But I would argue, and tell me if you think differently, a lot of this just all kind of starts with adherence, right? Like making sure the client can adhere to the plan structure that you set up when you look at like a nutritional hierarchy. And kind of laying that out a little bit and diving into it from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's for anything programming wise, like what is training adherence, nutrition adherence? Like you can't follow a plan, it's not going to pan out to be a result. However, with that being said, you are signing up for a bodybuilding show. You're going to have to do things that maybe you don't want to do just yet. That goal of like getting peeled out on stage is going to have to supersede and challenge your ability to adhere. So it needs to also progress you up to the level that your goal is set at, because we could make a diet like, hey, I like to eat pizza every week. That's what I can adhere to. Well, that's not going to cut it for your contest prep, is it? So there's a, when we speak about adherence, there's certain strategies I think we mean in a contest prep of being able to see out a show for maybe the earlier on competitor that has never experienced these levels of hunger and fatigue. We could offset some of that by strategies nutrition wise that we could utilize. Also that means some degree of sustainability in your diet too, which, you know, things to consider when you're first moving someone. And we talked about this, you know, everyone go back to our training one, of what needs to happen before you enter into contest prep in this pre-prep phase is starting to set the framework up of nutrition, adherence, and sustainability. With, I think the first thing talking about is, and what is really going to be the stop point for adherence is yummy, highly palatable, off-plan foods, right? Mm-hmm. So I think when we're first setting this up, well, what is a... what creates dietary adherence? And honestly, a little bit more of a bland diet can reduce some of that drive to want to eat more palatable foods. So in the pre-prep phase, before we even enter in this big deficit, that's kind of a first move to make. Like, hey, if you've been doing a like more frequent off-plan eating, let's start to pull that back in and get that more to a little bit stricter of a meal plan. And removing some of those palatable foods, for one, you might get leaner, might have better health metrics, but also it makes an easier transition into when you're getting into a more restrictive state.
Mm-hmm. I think within that, that's part of why I bring it up first, is part of that diet structure and adherence creates predictability as well, because that predictability in not only adhering to the plan, but food choices being a bit more consistent, not shifting foods into highly palatable items as you get hungrier, can really start to make it more predictable from an assessment standpoint as a coach in order to drive better decisions from running the rate of loss, which I think is kind of that next piece of that rate of loss, and like how fast you run that is a large indicator of how easy it is to retain tissue across a prep. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Like that's what's going to determine your overall output versus input, calorie in, calorie out setup is for one, giving yourself enough time. And that goes back to assessing truly, like accurately, how much body fat do you really need to pull off, and do it basically at that point, it's a math equation of making sure that, and what we have seen in the literature, and I think it pans out to also what we see in our coaching experience, is that trying to push someone past like 1% body weight loss per week can be a challenge for one, just having the tools to be able to do it. And what I mean by that is that the 120-pound bikini competitor likely can't even go that fast anyway, because she doesn't have the calories to create that amount of a deficit. Uh-huh. But also, if you're planning that out on the back end of a prep towards the end, you just truly just can't even create the deficit to have that amount of fat loss occur. So to go at a slower rate allows more food to be present, which also allows less fatigue to be present, which makes everything feel easier. Be improved sleep means also less hunger signaling issues, more less like food focus. It's one of the biggest things that I've noticed just with prepping with better durations of time is that fatigue is so much more manageable that I don't want to go fill that uncomfortability with that dopamine response of something yummy. You know, it's like you in prep, you just have to sustain this like uncomfortable state. And what do you want to make you feel good? It's like, well, people find all kinds of vices in prep to do it, whether it be like more chewing gum or more Walden Farm syrup, or, hey, I want that cheat meal, or I'm going to start, you know, using Nicorette gum or something crazy, right? It's like you need to stop making vices for yourself in prep. But one way to do that is to have a deficit that you can actually adhere to that's going to be beneficial to retain more muscle, because more food allows better training, which means more muscle retention. So this is the start point of how are you going to retain muscle across a prep. Give yourself enough time and don't run a calorie deficit that's overly aggressive off the bat. What would be on the back end, but regardless, even on the front end too.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and make a broad statement here, and you can tell me if you disagree. But I think 85% to 90% of the problems people have with retention issues strictly come down to the rate of loss they run across prep.
Yeah, I would probably challenge your statistical percentages, because I don't know what that's based on, Luke.
Just complete anecdote, complete anecdote. But like, no. Just from like clients coming across the board, I think that that's probably largely the biggest thing, because that rate of loss, here's how my head and my logic goes from that observation anecdotally. The rate of loss not only drives food dropping quicker, but it drives fatigue accumulation quicker, because activity has to go up faster. Fatigue accumulation going up quicker now has a bigger detriment to the training performance within the gym, which is the core stimulus for driving retentive properties. And so all of these changes that are forced upon an athlete in order to hit the rate of loss is now driving lack of performance retention that could in the end potentially be the detriment for actually retaining tissue across the prep.
No, I completely agree. Basically, you gave the setup for you're in a state where you're now have a poor stimulus of retaining tissue. Uh-huh. Your training sucks, in other words, and you have less ability to recover from what is now this poor, shitty stimulus, which all that means is very poor muscle retention. I mean, think about an offseason. That would be terrible to try to grow muscle in, right? So it's going to be even more catastrophic in a prep. So you're absolutely right. Like, And what happens is at the end of prep, getting towards the end, you're like, oh man, I still need to like really pull this off. And you get even more aggressive with it. And that's when training really tanks off too. You especially see it in like the weight class athlete where you have to hit a weight goal. Just training just tanks at the end when you try to rip it off real quick, versus if you reverse engineered the prep and have slowly tapered down that weight over time, you have a little bit better chance of retaining tissue across the prep. I think what happens is we then try to just put in more drugs to account for the poor prep timing, instead of just have given that person less time and then less fatigue in turn and better training in turn, and you would have less requirement of drug load as well. So a lot of this starts with planning off the front end of your prep, to where you don't run into these type of situations where you'll worry about muscle retention when I'm there and it's an issue, versus trying to pre-plan your strategies ahead.
Yeah. So then let's circle back to nutrition, because I think there's a little bit of more like finite stuff we can look at in regards to that. So we set like assuming a rate of loss is pretty good. I think there's a discussion to be had of one, like obviously protein intakes, but two, the rate at which caloric changes happen differ across a prep, like the first portion of prep versus the middle versus the back end. And I think maybe that's where a lot of the productive conversation with nutrition management happens relative to kind of what the rate of loss looks like for a lot of the nutritional based stuff that can drive actual retention there.
Right. So, with off the front of prep, you can definitely run a more aggressive deficit. You have more body fat, mm-hmm. and in turn also be able to pull off more. Recovery is going to be higher, everything. So you could run it more aggressive off the front end. And there's the debate of, and I know we have a separate, podcast on cardio for muscle retention, but you do have to weigh in like the balance of how much cardio or steps do you increase versus how much food do you pull down. And it's really just assessing where that client is at initially to create the easiest deficit possible with upholding that training. But again, in the off season, what are you going to have the biggest tool to pull from is going to be food, and also the most accurately measured. So in turn, a little bit more of a predictable outcome. So food's going to be the biggest one to slash down at first. Even with that being said, with food coming down first, you might think that, well, if you need to give this person some type of recovery day, like a refeed early in prep, that you would bump food up. That would be your course of action. But I find that this is just not the case, and that a diet fatigue aspect of like glycogen depletion impacting training is not the issue. It's more of a systemic fatigue buildup impacting, could be sleep, overall mood, ability to output at a high level. And I don't just mean in training, but just overall daily life. I find that's more of the issue, where so instead of doing refeed days early in prep, we're adding food in, you would just be doing output reductions. So do we call them de-output days? I don't know. We should have a really cool, catchy term that we make. But anyway, so rather have like a day where you just pull them back on cardio and steps, let them recover, and then we go right back to higher steps, back to cardio, and we leave the diet alone. Then as we transition more into prep, we get leaner, glycogen levels drop down more, you start getting flat, that starts impacting training performance. And if fat loss is on track, that might be the case where we start bringing in these refeed days. And to bring in the refeed days, in turn, you're going to also be diminishing your calorie deficit, because you're going to have high calorie days now with those same days that were low for the weekly average. Now creates less deficit, which is exactly what you want as you're transitioning towards peak week and getting leaner, is a smaller deficit when you have less body fat stores to be able to pull from, and that would allow better muscle retention. So that's how I see that transition occurring across a prep, is at least from the fatigue management side, we start doing our de-output days and then transition those into more refeeding days. Probably still having some de-output days, like how I'm using our new term here, and going about that way. But what you had brought up across the prep, there will still be this progressive increase of output, decrease in food, basically trying to assess the client and where we can pull is from the lesser evil. So if you're going to have clients that have no problem with cardio, and maybe we add in there, or clients that aren't hungry on prep at all, and we pull down there. And so that's kind of the overall framework of just, I think, calorie transitions across the prep. Would you have something to add or disagree in there?
No, I think the longer I do this, the more heavily I rely on our de-output days. And John is so pleased with himself on this terminology he just came up with. And I less rely on these like higher food days. I think we can kind of, unless there's some psychological preference towards that, that's the main reason I would maybe run like a high-low dynamic, is psychologically someone does better with that. But that's not from like what I would see for most people, like out of an anecdote observation of what they can manage. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't really add too much. I think it's more kind of transitioning into potentially dispelling a myth from like a contest prep situation, especially within the enhanced audiences, you know, allowing fats to get a bit on the lower side so that carbohydrates can stay in for performance metrics is definitely going to be biased quite a bit as you go throughout the prep, because everything, including the nutrition dynamic, should be being pushed towards fueling training so that you can retain that tissue across the entirety of the prep. And that's just kind of the direction that most plans are going to start heading. And we can kind of dive into that a bit more in depth, but that would be kind of like the next step for me, is all these people taking, you know, 1500 grams of compounds, worried about whether they have 30 or 40 grams of fat in their meal plan for hormonal reasons. It's like, yeah, well, maybe we've got that covered on the PD side, so we should be good, you know?
Yeah, even on the natural side, I don't think the fat intake is going to uphold your hormone profile.
It's not.
We've learned, you know, we're past that in the learning front of that. This really is this, you know, relative energy deficiency syndrome, right? To where it's not just about calories or dietary fats. Let me say that again. It's not just about one macronutrient. It's really about your total calories, your output, and your body fat stores all creating this energy load in the body, right? So if you get low body fat, you get low food and high output, like that's going to be the biggest driving force to skew hormones to a less anabolic profile versus whether you had 10 extra grams of fat or not.
Yes.
So, you know, with that being said, what is going to retain muscle on prep? Well, if you're natural, hormones are going down regardless, but the main thing is going to be gym performance. That's your biggest stimulus to retain tissue. So look at the studies, if you'd like, on ketogenic diets and training performance. They're not great. And especially from even a optimizing muscle building, can you build muscle and build strength on those? Absolutely. So it's not what I'm saying at all, but to the level that we want for bodybuilding and being very specific for hypertrophy, it's not going to be as ideal. Look at the best bodybuilders in the world across all of them. They're all following pretty much low fat, higher carbohydrate diets across the board. Absolutely phases where carbohydrates will have to come down. But with fat loss on track, I would try to keep carbohydrates up as much as possible to uphold that training performance. And then if we start seeing that slip because of a fuel problem, that's when I would pull fats down and go down to trace amounts if needed. And it's absolutely fine to have periods of like very, very low amounts of fats. The risk for essential fatty acid deficiency syndrome, it takes almost zero fats for like weeks on end. And that's really just a case of hospitalized patients, because in a diet where you're still eating whole foods, you're not going to be able to go to like zero fats. So it's just not really a thing. So uphold your carbohydrates. That's how I would mainly program the macronutrients. And with one thing is that I would shift is that keeping protein high on the front end of prep up until the point where carbohydrate becomes the limited macro in gym performance. And when that happens, protein isn't as muscle retentive as carbohydrate, because now we're getting a poor training stimulus. So that's where you might consider shifting some protein calories into carbohydrate calories. Now it's not this direct trade-off, right? You could definitely have more thermic effect of food from protein and, you know, et cetera. So, but again, carbohydrate at some point is going to be more muscle retentive than protein. So upholding that would be really of high importance on that tail end of prep. Now,
yeah,
I do have a question for you, Luke, because we already brought up refeeds. We're bringing up carbohydrate, following a little bit more of a higher carbohydrate intake. And one thing is, where do you, for training performance, because this is really what comes into bay when you're talking about upholding gym performance, how to go about bringing up the refeed day to actually get a training performance benefit. What do you see happen here that really leads to that? Because is it just an untracked meal, like, hey, go eat some sushi rolls? Or is it, should you spread the carbohydrates over one day, over 2 days? Or do you not even do that at all? Do you just raise food up across all days? What are you seeing, like, coaching that actually leads to what you're trying to do when you make the decision for a refeed of training performance? Like, what is the best strategy in that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, what I see, it's never single factorial. So it's never solely the increase in food that's driving the increase in performance. So it's always, if there's a high day coming, there's always associated drops in activity that are going to coincide with that. I think there's a point where you may make a change as activity only in prep, and you don't see the improved response that you were expecting like you would have earlier in the prep. And that's where that transition point starts to become, it needs to be food and activity. I do find this happens on the back end of prep, but actually I've found that it's no longer about, and this is something that I think should be covered within this. It's not solely about planning high food on the highest output day. It's more about sufficiently getting them to a place where it's transitioning into performance. And so I'm actually finding myself largely planning it across 2, maybe 3 days, with that first day being high food on a rest day, largely to kind of pull them out of that hole a bit quicker, where I'm not then having to do it at one as high of a clip nutritionally of, like, you know, maybe I can get away with 300 grams of carbs added or 200 versus 5 or 6. And then spreading it across multiple days so that I see that impact in training performance across 4, 5, 6 days later. And that's more where the majority of them end up landing, in that 2 day refeed, first day rest day, second day training. And then that's kind of how I'm transitioning them in, with activity dropped on both those days as well.
I like that, because I've had some people that can out train the refeed day. And what I mean by that is, maybe they still, like, they get fullness from the day, but just the psychology of having more food on this high output day, they end up smashing that day, right? Like, oh, it's leg day and it's a high day, I'm going to annihilate legs. What happens? Super dug down in a hole of fatigue, like, legs absolutely smashed. Now cardio's harder, now steps are harder. We now, like, just made a less productive state. So that's one consideration around it. You also need to be mindful too, like, we're talking about someone that has fat loss on track. We absolutely have to manage fatigue, but you have to think, like, you're going to bring someone up. And I think this is a point to address, is that the goal of the day is to do its job of gym performance, drop off fatigue, and get back to a state of fat loss that's needed. And so if you're feeding someone so much that it doesn't check some of those boxes, that's when you might be doing it incorrectly. So where, if I've had people that follow a refeed day and they're up 4 pounds, then it takes me another 6 days to pull them back to a baseline to get fat loss productive again. That took a lot of time out of prep. You took a week off your prep. So we're essentially just trying to bring someone up to near maintenance. Sometimes it's slightly above, to where we gain some fullness, we have that gym performance aspect, but also not losing ground to get right back to fat loss within the next few days after that string of feeding them.
Yeah. And I think it's largely, like, what is the goal of the refeed? It's to keep them clipping for 5, 6, 7, 8 days from there. Because if the rate of fat loss is in check, you're not trying to take them out of that rate of loss. You're trying to keep that rate of loss going. So you're hoping that the temporary pullback transitions into them being able to move along across multiple weeks. And so it's so much around, how does this affect the following days, where it's so important to make sure that what you do translates to the days after, which is why I actually post refeeds. I have my clients check in the day after, 2 days after, and the 3 days after, because I'm trying to keep such a close eye of, like, where is this trending once they're back in plan. And it doesn't have to be like a full update. It can just be, you know, quick update, but it's their touching base the first 3 days post refeeds when they're deep in prep.
I think, like, from the macro conversation, is a little bit getting into nutrient timing as well. Just a touch on micronutrient considerations. And this is also going to touch on, adherence to sustainability, because as food is going down, just volume is going down as well. There is going to be less diet variety potentially, and less of the micronutrients, which we see common micronutrient deficiencies in bodybuilders with, for females could be iron, zinc, selenium, magnesium, vitamin D, all these items, which are like, it's cool, I take a multivitamin, that's great and all. We do want to try to gain these from foods as well, because some of these are some of the most bioavailable sources to gain them from. But also, the foods you gain these items from are also going to be, have the greatest impact on hunger management too. So one thing I see that falls off on prep for a lot of people are fruits, for one. Rice is palatable, but the volume of it really sucks to eat. So because it's small, and so it doesn't hold you over for very longer, you should uphold your fruit intake from the off season throughout your prep for the micronutrient aspect, but also it'll help with hunger management. Another one from that would be vegetables. Managing vegetable intake, high amounts and low amounts. Some people start adding more in. There's still calories. So these aren't devoid of calories just because there is a little bit of fiber. There still is an amount that is processable. Even soluble fiber is not calorie free. It's 2 calories per gram. So just don't think of veggies as being freebies, adding more in. But from a hunger management standpoint, upholding that fruit and vegetable intake on prep would be huge for adherence, but also making a complete diet where you fill in all the micronutrient gaps. That's the main point that I just want to make around your micros. Then of course, you know, anything we can't fill in with the diet, we would use like supplementation at that point.
I think if we look through the nutritional hierarchy too, this starts to transition into the nutrient timing becoming more important, where I really think narrowing an athlete down into some semblance of a meal plan, the deeper into prep that you go, is extremely important. I have some athletes that are skilled enough as nutritional experts or experienced dieters, I should say, where I feel comfortable with them making swaps with the same foods they're using, but it's off of a meal plan that's exactly matching macros for the meals around training. And that's just like a non-negotiable at that point when you're wanting to be the best version of yourself for a show, which is what we're sitting here trying to talk about, right? And it's dually performance driven from nutrient timing around training, and secondarily, ability to assess the athlete in the most important aspects of prep. And that is such a huge aspect of a coach being able to do their job. It's like, if there's a time of the year that you do Groundhog Day the most, it needs to be this. And you really need to kind of put this highly palatable hunger drive that you have to the side and do the things that are going to get you there.
I found those that want to do more of the macro approaches, in the back of their mind, there is a protective barrier to try to just manage hunger at all costs and be a very highly emotional eater. So they transition those macros. A lot of them will move a lot towards the end of the day, so they can almost have this pseudo binge of high amounts of food. And it just leads to, like you said, hard time assessing, and then a rotation of different food items. And also this an unhealthy food focus of all day long, you're planning out, how can I make the most of my macros? And so from a coaching aspect, it makes it very hard to manage that. I think it is better to follow just a meal plan. And again, we look anecdotally to the best in the world. What do they do? Well, they follow relatively set meal plans with a relatively small diversity in food options for specific reasons. Now there's a time and place for like macro approaches, or even if you gave that athlete like a food list to go off of, that you could understand that would be repeatable. But I think when you go and give someone too much rein, that it'll then lead to them having less than their best on stage for the reasons that we had just mentioned. I think it does need to be relatively set, so they're not not moving food from places where nutrient timing starts to really matter. So we have a few things around nutrient timing that are going to matter on prep for muscle retention. For one, the leaner you get, the more glycogen depleted you get, timing food around training likely starts to matter a whole lot more. When in the off season, maybe it doesn't matter at all because you're not very glycogen depleted, but having enough, you know, carbohydrate prior to training would matter. Having enough post-training to have recovery for your next cardio and training session, that would matter as well. Then lastly, timing food also with consideration to manage hunger too. And that could impact sleep. Like you had some guys where you programmed a diet where you had like, I don't know, egg whites before bed or just a whey shake. Man. And you wake up like, man, I sleep terrible. Like, why do you sleep terrible? Oh, I wake up starving every night. It's like, oh man, well maybe we should move some food like before bed or a different type of food before bed. Then through that, you manage hunger, you get better sleep. Now fatigue's better. Now training's better. And that, you know, so on and so on. So that should be a consideration around nutrient timing strategy and food choice strategy when we're looking at it. And how does that get back to muscle retention? Well, again, Luke and I talked about it. If you manage fatigue, you get better sleep, you're recovering, that leads to better training, and better training leads to more muscle retention on prep.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. That, I don't know if I have a whole lot more to add unless we're just adding client stories.
No, I think that's the down and dirty to like retaining muscle with the nutrition across the prep without getting too in depth on the weeds. But that's why we have J3U for you to get into the weeds and the nuance. And we just recently reshot our whole nutrition section for one. Yeah. You get to see us in better video quality, and we actually don't look this just grungy and unman-groomed, right? We're like so well-groomed.
This is not what's on the modules. I apologize for my appearance today.
we have our beautiful audio now, and Luke and I have added sections into the nutrition of J3U around everything we talked about too. So it's super in-depth. It's, I would argue, it's the most in-depth nutrition physique enhancement teachings that are around. So anyway, that's out there, but so dive in. If you want to like get more of what we just talked about today, we fully cover it in our nutrition module, but we'll wrap it up there, everybody. So thank you so much for tuning in, and Luke and I will talk to you next time.